Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
A troubled teenager is found strangled in a graveyard, laid to rest respectfully before a headstone. What secrets did she have? And who wanted them kept? Just the opening little tease there from Life and Death, an awesome title from J.M. Dalgliesh. And it's no surprise that Jason Dalgliesh has indeed been shortlisted for the latest awesome poll in terms of the Academy Awards of the literary world. And guess what? He's with us now, Jason. Good to see you. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, Alex. Thanks for having me on the show.
I mean, I've got to say, I think in terms of this whole sort of sequence, it could be, well, obviously, Life and Death was not the entry. The entry that you've actually got for this is Hear No Evil.
That's correct, yes.
So I'm thinking Three Monkeys, See No Evil, Speak No Evil, Hear No Evil. Is
it, yes, yeah, that's that. That fits in, yes, that's right. Well spotted.
Well, you know, I didn't watch Planet of the Apes as a child without actually having some sort of resonance on the whole thing. But in terms of this, how did you feel when this was nominated, obviously, for this fabulous notion of the UK Kindle Storyteller Award?
It was wonderful, and it still is. It's been a couple of weeks since I found out, and it's still very surreal. I mean, put it in a little bit of perspective for me, my first book was published in May of 2018, so it was only 2 and a bit years ago. And then you come forward to now, and the readers are the ones that have nominated this book. So it's not, Hear No Evil wasn't nominated by a small group of people sitting in an office somewhere looking at structure and analysing it. It was nominated by the readership. So when your readers really think your book's a bit of a, you know, a cracker, then it feels very, very good indeed.
And I think, you know, that's one of the key things. I mean, these devices, he says, holding up the Kindle and Fire to the camera, is very much at the heart of this. I mean, there was a time where, say you were self-published, people said, oh, well, you know, there was almost a kind of snobbery about the fact that you were self-published, etc. You, together with obviously the other candidates for this award, have clearly proved that's not the case. And ultimately, it's all about good storytelling.
It is. I mean, the beauty of self-publishing or indie publishing and doing it through Amazon's KDP platform is that ultimately the readership decides. You know, you put your book out there, which is very easy to do, and the audience will decide whether it's good or not. And believe me, they'll let you know if it isn't. So when people sort of look down and think, oh no, well, self-publishing isn't as good. Well, actually, it's exactly the same. We do the same processes. We have editors, we have copy editors, proofreaders, cover designers. We go through exactly the same process as they do, but we have control over when we release it. And what happens with it and how often we release. I mean, how often do you see, you know, traditional publishers, you're Ian Rankin or anyone really, they will have a book every 18 months, 2 years. Now, that's not because it takes them 2 years to write a book, but because the publishers don't want them to write any quicker than that. They want to do all their processes and release the hardback and the audio and the ebook and paperback whenever they like.
Arrange the interviews, get the radio shows booked, get the other books.
Absolutely, yeah. But this is all exactly the same. It still goes on. So we are just as involved in the process as they are. But you know, it's also a modern world. You know, I mean, you know yourself, we go digital and you have Zoom interviews now, and you know, the traditional world still operates in the same way it did 20, 30, 40 years ago. But not just the media is changing because of technology, but the readership's changing as well. You know, we don't, if you watch a TV series now, people want to be able to binge watch a TV series of 10 episodes when they want to watch it. They don't want to wait 1 a week. And people are doing the same with books. They want to be able to pick up a book when they want to read it and read it. So if there's a series, they want to be able to read all of them. I get emails from people saying, when's the next one coming out? It's like, well, I released the last one in August. I'll have to write it. It takes a bit of time. But yeah.
Now, Hear No Evil, a fast-paced British detective novel with moments of humour and a touch of romance that will keep us guessing until the very end, when, of course, the final shocking twist or denouement is revealed from that. The key thing about this, Jason, is that it's written during lockdown. Now, we've spoken to an awful lot of authors during lockdown, and many people have actually said, yeah, it's all very well saying, oh, you're in lockdown. What a wonderful opportunity to actually write. You're a father as well. You've got all that sort of details in terms of working process. understandably, a number of authors said, that's the last thing we were able to do. Actually, lockdown's been bad for that. So how can you manage to actually combine writing this fantastic, potentially award-winning novel, you know, in a period where you're looking after your children and so on and so forth?
I was very surprised myself. I have to be honest with you, Alice. I was looking at it and I thought, shall I push this back? You know, because the school's closed. We have two young children, 6 and 9. And obviously school closed, they were home. And normally I do the school run. I take them to school. I drop them off. And then I've got 5-6 hours of peace and quiet in the house alone where I can get my words down and formulate my ideas. And that all went out the window completely. You know, suddenly I was an entertainer, I was a teacher, and I was still trying to write as well. So the easy thing would have been to just push it aside. But, you know, we can't do that. We've all got to live. We've still got lives, still got jobs. We've got things we have to do. So I thought, no, I will carry on and I'll write. But what happened was I went from having a 5 or 6 hour window of writing was compressed into sort of 2 1-hour sessions at various points of the day when it was like, right, okay, this is my time, I need to write. So I had to be much more productive in a much narrower time frame. And believe it or not, I wrote this book faster than I've written any of my other titles. And then it gets nominated for shortlisted for the Kindle Storyteller Award, and I think, well, maybe I should do that more often, you know. I don't, it's obviously worked.
And presumably, you're one of those wonderful modern writers who uses a keyboard as opposed to a quill pen or handwrites the thing. Because I think there are still some of those folk actually out there who prefer that intimate contact.
I do. I mean, looking back, I tried my first attempt at writing a book, which was when I was about 17. Didn't go well. And if I'd carried on writing that book, I think I'll still be writing it now. And I wrote that old fashioned with a pen and paper. And I've got it somewhere stashed. It's about a stack of paper about this high with my illegible scrawl on it. So I do use keyboards, and it's much easier for me.
I'd obviously recommend jmdalgleish.com as your own website and go-to place. Correct. To actually work through that. You can even get your free novella. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. Introduce yourself to my writing free of charge. I'm sorry, it's generous.
Clearly, I mean, you've done extraordinarily well to actually be shortlisted for this award in the first place. I mean, I think it's been a record number of entries that Amazon have actually had from that point of view. So you're one of the five. We will wish you well, you know.
Thank you.
I'm sure it'll be classic. We'll be having chats with some of the other authors as well in the author feature from that point of view. In case folk are actually wondering, it's a worthwhile prize, I think. £20,000 is not to be sniffed at.
It's certainly not to be sniffed at, no. It's, who couldn't use £20,000?
Exactly. And, of course, a golden Kindle.
Golden absolutely. Kindle. Yes, my wife's already said, could she have that? I don't know.
It's a way forward. Have you looked at the other authors? Have you sort of said, oh, I'll just see what the competition's like? And I mean, obviously no names, and say, oh, that's rubbish, that's great, etc.
I wasn't going to. Obviously, of course I was. As soon as the shortlist came out, I was straight onto Amazon web pages looking at them, reading up what they're about and who they're about. It's a very interesting mix from crime thriller to writing memoir of a journey from South America. It's very mixed range. And as I say, because the readers have nominated the books, they're all well worth a read. They have to be, or they wouldn't be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jason, again, it's been a delight touching base with your good self in terms of obviously the Amazon shortlist and so on from that point of view. We've got two final questions. We ask them inevitably with respect to authors. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Oh, I've loved it. Yes, it's been great. Thank you. It's been great having me on.
As I say, it's always quite nice because normally, as I say, if the interviewee doesn't have their camera on, we won't switch the camera on out of, you know, work for that. So it's been nice to actually have a face-to-face link for that.
To see someone, yes.
I know, astounding.
It's also the modern world, isn't it?
Oh.
We've got to get used to it this year, haven't we?
Indeed. So the next critical question is, will you be kind enough to return post-awards, whatever the results are, or will you come back and actually share more of your author details with us in the near future?
I would love to. Yes, more than happy to, anytime.
Jason Dalgleish, huge thanks and very best of luck.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
Adventurer, motivational speaker, influencer, and author, recently named by Condé Nast Traveler as one of the 50 most influential travelers of our time, by The Guardian, named one of the top modern female adventurers, UK ambassador for girl guiding. Is there no end to the delights of Anna McNuff and her abilities and skills, etc.? Well, she's only been shortlisted for the Amazon UK Kindle Storyteller Award 2020 with an awesome text entitled Llama Dharma, and Llama Drama even. And we're delighted to say Anna McNuff is with us now. How are you, Anna?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you. What an intro. I feel like I'm in a boxing ring about to come onto a match. That was great. Thank you.
We've got the fanfare and everything else for that. I mean, I'm just amazed that you actually attempted to run the distance of 100 marathons through Great Britain in your bare feet. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that was a bit crazy. Whenever I hear someone else say that, I think, who is this mad woman? Then I realise it's me.
Well, you know, it obviously proves that you write about what you know about. And this particular line, Llama Drama, the tale of two women, your good self, of course, Anna, and your friend Faye, embarking on a 6-month, 5,500-mile cycling adventure through South America. I have to ask the question, Anna, that I'm sure couch potatoes around the globe will be asking at this moment in time. Why?
I ask myself that question many times, normally while I'm on an adventure, halfway up a mountain. I think it's just, I've been reasonably sporty in the past, but I've just got this wanderlust and I'm just like a kid when it comes to exploring the world. And so I always think, well, if I can see it, if I'm running or cycling, then that's a cooler way for me to see it than in a car. And it just comes a bit more naturally. I've got absolute phobia of motors. I can't fix anything, but I figure that I can probably keep my body going because I understand that machine. So yeah, it just suits me, but I understand it is not for everyone. But that's why I write the book, so that people can go on these adventures from their armchair and they don't have to leave the house.
And more than that, of course, Anna, I mean, it's proving that you've got a mastery over the whole literary aspect, because this has been shortlisted, as I say, for the UK Kindle Storyteller Award. You're in the top five. How did you feel when you found out that you've been shortlisted?
Oh, I mean, it's just mind blowing because, you know, you write these books and I just sent the entry off a few months ago and didn't think any more of it. And it gets thousands and thousands of entries. And then when I got the mysterious call from Amazon telling me I'd been shortlisted down to the last five, I just couldn't believe it. It's such a nice feeling. It just feels like, you know, a bit of validation. And oh, yes, you know, it's nice that all my readers think my books are good, but to actually have someone like Amazon just say, yeah, your book's pretty good and it's in the top set, it just feels, it's really encouraging.
I mean, I really would not like to be one of the judges on this particular piece. I know they've got Claudia Winkleman, they've got LJ Ross and Mark Dawson, you've got last year's Kindle Storyteller Award Soul as well, but it is a really tough call. I mean, you know, in a real sense, just looking at the kind of work that you've been putting together, I mean, if it's for endurance alone, you're going to win, but the categories, they're all so different, really.
No, they are, which is why it's quite a nice thing, to be honest, to going into the final and going, well, it's in the lap of the gods. You know, the books are all so different. They're all by fantastic authors. And it's just going to come down to what people are fancying reading on the day and what floats the boat. So that's the best position to be in. It's out of my control and I just got to let it be.
So when you were trekking across or cycling across South America, did you have a Kindle by your side, or was it a case of don't be crazy, I'm too busy actually adventuring to actually bother with reading?
No, I'll let you into a secret. When I go on adventures, I tend to take a bit more stuff than these hardcore adventurers do. I like to have a nice big tent. I like to make sure I've got enough chocolate in my backpack for the evening so that I can enjoy myself. And I do always take a Kindle with me, because when you're on an adventure, the sun's going down at 6:30, 7 o'clock, and you're in your tent halfway up a mountain. So it's actually a great time to get a load of sleep and to read a load of books.
Hey, this is fantastic stuff. I mean, clearly, you know, that's got to put you in one of the pole positions to actually sort of work through that. You've actually got your own Kindle as well to hand.
Yeah, it's battered.
In terms of again, looking at your own sort of background, I'm fascinated by the fact that you were talk regularly about the importance of adopting a growth mindset in everything. And there's a wonderful quote that I think really resonated with me. You believe that there's more strength and magic in each of us than we will ever know. And adventure is your personal way of unlocking that.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. In everything I've learned, all these adventures that I've done, I've always felt at the start, what on earth am I doing? I feel in over my head. I'm terrified. I'm excited. I want to back out at the last minute. And then I go through with it. And it just shows me that the strength that I've got that I didn't realize I had. And I think that's true of everyone. I don't think there's anything different. I think it's just about finding a way to get over that first uncomfortable set of hurdles.
And the title Llama Drama, was it something you were looking to find something which rhymed with Bananarama, or was it something completely different?
Well, I was actually, I mean, that is a bonus really, isn't it? But no, I was just talking it through with my boyfriend about what am I going to call this book? And we just saw so many llamas and we loved them. And then there were obviously a few dramas while we were out there in terms of just the adventure itself with crashes and dog bites and all of that, but also in the friendship between Faye and I, you know, you're spending 6 months and 24 hours a day with someone, there's going to be some dramas. So it just fitted beautifully.
Well, I was going to ask about Faye, actually. I mean, was this a willing accomplice? Did she have lots of enthusiasm at the start? And by the time you actually completed maybe 2,000 of the 5,500-mile cycling trip, was she beginning to think, what have I done? What was the sort of general line between the two of you?
Yeah, she was a willing accomplice. And to be fair, she was the person that popped to mind when I thought, who can I take with me and who would be crazy enough to say yes to this mad adventure idea? And so she was wonderfully willing from the start. But there were definitely a few times when we were out there, you know, we're up at 5,500 meters and we're running low on food and water and all of that. And I think she probably questioned what she was doing. But she had the journey of her life as well. And we both grew as individuals. And that was the beautiful thing about it.
Yeah. And I think llamas are often sometimes known for spitting as well, which is not hygienic and really can be quite problematic in its own way. So just always beware the llama that has its own sort of mood on that side of things. Briefly, 5,500 miles through South America. Did you cover a range of countries? What was the official sort of schedule?
Yeah, so it was three. So we went from La Paz in Bolivia, which is one of the highest capital cities in the world. And then we cycled basically along the spine of the Andes Mountains, crisscrossing between Chile and Argentina, all the way down to that little southern tip of South America. So it was three countries, three vastly different countries, and a whole lot of mountains. And it was just amazing, beautiful, everything in between.
Well, I'm going to get a copy immediately. I think it's essential that Llama Drama is actually on the list of Kindle stuff. You can obviously go to amazon.co.uk and find out more details about the UK Kindle Storyteller Award. And presumably, Anna, annamcnuff.com is a great opening introduction to some of the awesome things that you put together with your speaking appearances, your books. And as I say, you're also the co-founder of Adventure Queens, the UK's fastest growing women's adventure community.
Yeah, I do love a bit of adventure, and it's all about not only getting out there myself, but just trying to help other people get outdoors and get exploring wherever they can. So, yeah, that's it. I'm the only Anna McNuff in the world. Very easy to find.
Well, there we are. Anna, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today. We'll wrap up with the usual two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Excellent. This is good. So the next critical question is, will you come back again post-awards and so on and actually speak to us again?
I would absolutely love that. 100%.
Anna McNuff, one of the finalists for this year's UK Kindle Storyteller Award 2020, of course. Huge thanks and the very best of luck, Anna.
Big cheers, Alex.
April 2019, Amazing Grace was published. Second book followed in September 2019, and now already she's been shortlisted for the UK Kindle Storyteller Award 2020. It's the awesome Kim Nash. How are you, Kim?
Hi, Alex. I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. So, again, proving that variety is indeed the spice of life. We've been speaking to authors who have been shortlisted for this aspect. We've got crime drama thrillers, we've got adventurers and so on. And of course, we have the romance, which is quite rightly a very popular character. And it's no surprise that you were nominated for this award by your readers as well in terms of the Kindle Storyteller area. So share with us, what were your thoughts when you first got that call from Amazon to say, Kim Nash, you've been shortlisted?
I was absolutely staggered. Yeah, I still can't believe it now, to be honest. And I'm still expecting a phone call from somebody to say, oh, I'm so sorry, it's not you after all.
That's not going to happen, Kim. That is not going to happen. You would not be doing this interview now if that was going to be happening. So it's great from that point of view. Of course, I mean, you've got a bit of a background in the industry because, I mean, you're head of publicity at a publishing house. You're a book blogger, kimthebookworm.co.uk. Awesome. So you kind of worked out. So was this something that had always been bubbling under in terms of, I want to write that novel?
I've always wanted to write a book ever since I was a little girl. I've read books all my life. Loved it when I started doing my book blogging. And then I think I kind of realised one day that I was immersed in a world of publishing and lots of other awesome authors. And I suppose I just kind of thought, well, if other people can do it, perhaps I could. But then I also realised that if I wanted to write a book, I had to physically do it and that nobody was going to do it for me. And so I put my bum on a chair and put my fingers on the keyboard and just started and saw, you know, sort of decided to just see where it took me. Took me a long time to admit I was writing.
Were you an avid romantic reader of texts and rom-coms, etc., or indeed romantic novelists before you actually started reading? I mean, was that a case of you immersed yourself in the whole genre?
Yeah, absolutely. It's my favourite genre. I do love crime thrillers even as well. And I love a bit of historical fiction. But if you ask me what was my favourite, then women's fiction is definitely my favourite. Okay. Love a happy ending, me.
And again, it's something which we've covered and sort of touched base with authors, etc. Are there any particular authors that you feel, yeah, actually, that's somebody I always aspire to, whether it's Barbara Cartland on the one hand, whether it's whomever, basically?
Yeah, I always look up to people like Harold Matthews, Millie Johnson, Nicola May, those sort of people. And it's been wonderful for me that since I've been sort of involved in the publishing world, I've kind of got to know these people and become friends with some of them. And, you know, they're all very, very inspiring and motivating and just encourage you to, you know, to do the same. I think what's lovely is that there's no sort of, I don't find in the literary world, or certainly in the commercial fiction world that I'm in, that there's any sort of competition because people read lots of books. So we all, you know, sort of encourage everybody else and promote each other. And that's been lovely. And Millie Johnson and Miranda Dickinson is another author who have both been absolutely incredible with me, along with, you know, so many others. I couldn't even name them all because I'd be here all day.
Just saying, anybody else who knows me, that's always good. Yeah, I'm preparing absolutely. You for the award-winning speech here, so it's all good. Again, you've definitely got a form because in 2016, you were awarded the Romantic Novelists Association Media Star of the Year Award. So, You know, obviously another 4 years go by. This could be another one sort of being notched up from that point of view.
Fingers
just
crossed.
Looking back to that particular aspect, was that as much of a thrill as being nominated and shortlisted for the Amazon Kindle Award, or was it a case of, it's so long ago now, I can't even remember?
No, I do remember. I remember it really well because we went to a big posh do in London, which was lovely. And again, when I found out I was nominated, I couldn't really believe it. I think I wouldn't say I'm particularly humble, but I'm just one of those people that kind of gets on with it. And I'm very lucky that I work in the publishing world. And, you know, to be just kind of nominated for that award was wonderful. I never thought for one minute that I would win it again, but then, you know, but I did. So it was incredible.
Absolutely. Now, Sunshine and Second Chances. This is your third novel. This is the one that obviously is up for the UK Kindle Storyteller Award. We have it here as an uplifting, feel-good summer read about friendship, love and second chances.
Indeed.
One-line descriptor. Tell us about your inspiration. Was it a case of, yeah, ultimately we wanted to ensure that's a philosophy I want to kind of share with the reader?
I love Portugal. I love the Algarve. It's one of my favourite holiday destinations. So it kind of seemed right to write about it. And I also have some incredibly amazing friends in my life. So I kind of thought if I can put a lovely location together with some brilliant friends, you know, then it could be a really good combination to explore. So it's set in, it's mostly set in the Algarve. Four women, there's Liv, who has a really perfect life on the outside of things and a busy family, but is just completely worn out and feels drained. Got Debs is newly single. She's just divorced from her husband and feeling really rubbish about herself. Fiona cares for her mum. Samantha's grieving. And she's also got a child who's just left for university. So there were all kind of things that people go through every single day of their lives. And I kind of wanted to put them all together and show that when you put strong women together, they can help inspire, motivate, lift each other. And they make some really life-changing decisions while they're out there on holiday before their plane to come home takes off.
Of course, one of the things about this year, which I'm sure will be influencing future narratives in all genres, is the pandemic. Has that kind of helped or hindered your own particular work? Because we've had lots of writers who said it's been fine. Other writers who said I've had to look after families and all sorts of things. Basically, it's been the worst thing for my writing your scenarios. What about yourself, Kim?
I've absolutely loved it, to be honest. I have a son who I didn't have to get up for school every morning. We obviously had to do homeschooling, but he's very good at sort of getting on with things himself that he was set. I've worked all the way through the pandemic, but it's just meant that I can maybe have a bit more time because, you know, we haven't been going out to, you know, he plays for a local football team, so we haven't had to go out to football matches, we haven't had to go out to football training. Everything slowed down. I go to a book club, we didn't even do book club, so literally I could write any time really that I wanted to. He's of an age where, you know, he doesn't need me holding his hand every 5 minutes. So, you know, it's worked really well for us, to be honest. I loved it. Bring it on. bring up more lockdown for me.
Yeah. And I mean, what we're doing now, you don't have to go to a studio. It's all great. You can always interconnect together and the medium sort of continues ever onwards. Looking at the other nominees for the actual award, we've got Norfolk, we've got Gloucester, we've got Las Vegas, we've even got Stoke-on-Trent, fairly close by Staffordshire, actually, so a couple of West Midlands sort of line from that point of view. I think it's Amanda Radley who's sort of West Midlands. Have you had a chance to look at the other nominees, or is it a case of, no, if it's not romantic fiction, I don't want to know?
No, I mean, I do read other things as well, but I haven't read the others. I think I'm probably scared to, in case they're tons better than mine. and I can't actually change anything there. So, no, I haven't read them yet. But I would like to get around to reading them.
Well, again, that debut novel, of course, Amazing Grace, a heartwarming, feel-good romantic comedy, still doing well from that point of view. Any thoughts in terms of TV adaptations, movie adaptations and so on? I mean, is that the next stage, or is it a case of I'll leave that to the agencies?
Oh, it's not something I've even thought about, to be honest. I never thought I'd get this far, to be truthful.
And something else I've got to mention, given obviously the chance of actually winning a golden Kindle for this, are you a Kindle user?
Oh, indeed I am. I love my Kindle. Yes, the £20,000 is an amazing prize. The wonderful Kindle is incredible.
Right. So, I mean, in terms of that Kindle thing, I'm just sort of intrigued by a few years ago. And actually, some of my students at Lincoln as well, when we talk about do they prefer the physicality of the books or the Kindle? And there seemed to be a bit of a drive back in recent years, people saying they like that physical feeling of a book. It's not the same reading it online, etc. Presumably, you'd actually say no. You can carry many more books and texts on a Kindle than you can with respect to having to lug them through customs.
You absolutely can. And I think for me, I never think these days. I sometimes read a book and I think about the book that I've read. And I don't actually remember a lot of the time whether I've read it on Kindle or I've read it in a book, because I remember the story and how good it was. So for me, you know, the fact that I can kind of go, oh, there's a book, I like the look of that, I can download it and it can be on my Kindle 5 minutes later and I'm reading it, is just, you know, convenience wise is amazing.
It's the 21st century, a whole new world, really. You know,
please.
Although at the same time, we'd like to support local bookshops as well. If you ever get a chance, support your local bookshop too, because they need help as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a place for people. You know, some people will never read on a Kindle and they love books. And I totally get that. I really do.
Kim, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with the good stuff today. We wish you the very best for the actual final piece. I mean, as we said, some interesting judges are on board. We mentioned, obviously, Claudia Winkleman and others. And I think it's good. I mean, you're all winners just for having been nominated. I mean, it's crazy to actually sort of work on that process. But, you know, I'm sure somebody will be picking up that golden Kindle and, as you say, £20,000 prize, marketing support, mentoring. You don't need any of that marketing support or mentoring, do you, Kim? Or is it just a case of, well, what the hell?
I don't think it would harm any at all. But I'm just, the thought that Claudia Winkleman is reading my book at some point just blows my mind.
Wow. Kim Nash, huge best wishes to your good self. We'll wrap up with the usual two questions. They're cliches, but we use them on the Midweek Drive. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today?
Yes, it's been fantastic. Thank you.
And the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future, probably post-awards-winning ceremonies?
I would love to come back if you'll have me.
Kim Nash, many thanks. Take care now.
Thank you very much.
Raised in a war-ravaged continent, temptation comes to Kala Caldwell in the form of a charming and mysterious stranger. Giving in to his intimate seduction, her world is forever changed by a single bite. Yes, it's another entry into the awesome Kindle Awards, the Kindle Storyteller Awards 2020. And we are very lucky to be able to have the author of those particular words with us now, all the way from Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Cameo Renee. How are you, Cameo?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. So excited to be here.
Well, it's very good to see you. And you've got your camera on, so I switched my camera on as well. So there we are. We can genuinely see each other in the media radio. I know, it's a shock, but what the hey. So I'm just fascinated by switching from Hawaii to Las Vegas. That's quite a culture shock, I would have thought, really.
It is actually. I was raised in Maui, Hawaii. We moved actually to Alaska and we're living there for about 10 years and just last year moved to Vegas. So,
well, what better inspiration to actually put Of the Bloods together? I mean, surely it's all there.
That's right. It sure is.
Now, share with us in terms of obviously this this wonderful piece, etc. It's a question we've been putting to most of the nominees for this particular award. How did you feel when you got the news that you'd been selected as and shortlisted for one of the potential prize winners of the Golden Kindle and more?
Oh my gosh, it's words cannot even describe. I was not even looking forward. I mean, I wasn't expecting it. So when I got the call, I actually cried. It was just an amazing, thrilling experience to be called. And I am just riding the high right now.
Well, that's fantasy at its finest, Cameo. And again, another line which you actually sort of put in your about section, which I thought was really particularly sort of interesting and poignant and appropriate for all writers and audiences. Without the readers, your books would be dead. Readers breathe life into the pages, share the adventures and connect with the characters as much as the authors do. So again, it's a really important sort of part from that point of view. And clearly you've managed to tap into the zeitgeist of obviously young adult literature here.
Yes. You know, all my books are young adult and I just feel that, you know, right now that's where I'm at. Young adult is my genre. Mostly paranormal and fantasy. So it's an exciting thing.
Well, I mean, we've got Mysteria, we've got the Midway series, we've got the In My Dreams duet, we've got Hidden Wings and the Afterlight saga. So, I mean, there's a whole range of magical mysticism, young adult stuff coming through with that. What were your own influences as a young reader that kind of inspired you to actually build on the shoulders?
My favorite series growing up was C.S. Lewis's Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And after I've read that series countless times and fell in love with the adventures of the children and wanted to find my own wardrobe and have adventures of my own. So I think that inspired me to write my own stories and create my own adventures.
Now, as I say, 19 books have been published in total. So, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's that kind of prolific sort of output, which is fantastic. Again, self-published. Talk to us a little bit about, is it Kala or Kala Caldwell? And this little adventure, which has obviously been shortlisted in terms of the Blood series.
Yes, Kala Caldwell. It's a young adult coming of age dark fantasy that follows 18-year-old Kala Caldwell. And, you know, she is one night on her 18th birthday party, a handsome stranger arrives and he compels her and eventually bites her. And then that bite actually changes her life forever. You know, from then she's thrust into a dark and mysterious world of vampires and witches and elementals and pirates and, Kala is a strong heroine. I wanted her to be strong. The love interest is not a normal young adult, not a romance novel. I wanted the love interest sort of disappears. And a lot of readers are like, what happened to the love interest? But I wanted it that way because I wanted the main character to grow and develop without the help of a brooding male. So she grows to be a strong and independent character throughout the story. And that's pretty much what I wanted, to show character growth through the main character.
Yeah, there's nothing more frustrating than when you actually meet up with a mysterious stranger and then you discover that they're a vampire prince. It can be a deal breaker, let's face it.
Exactly.
Problematic in so many ways. Never mind. Clearly, there's been, I suppose you could argue, you mentioned C.S. Lewis, but obviously moving into the sort of televisual world, you've got your Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you've got Twilight, of course, that's been echoed from that point of view. What is it, do you think, that actually gives us this fascination, or right the way back to Bram Stoker, with the character of the vampire and the whole sort of essence of that mysterious and somehow forbidden figure?
You know, I've always been fascinated with vampires. My husband and I watch pretty much all the vampire movies out there. We're fans. But I think it's just the mysteria behind the vampires. They're so dark, and there's so many different ways that you can write a vampire character. He can be handsome and sparkling or dark and, you know, menacing and just a monster. So it depends, I guess, on the author, on what they, you know, want to perceive their vampire as. So it's game.
So it's either Nosferatu, or it's Christopher Lee, or it's David Bowie, or it's possibly David Boreanaz as Angel. Who knows?
Right, exactly.
Okay, now, the one thing that's really impressed me about this particular competition, I mean, obviously nominated by the readers, which is great, but again, the range of genres. You've got romantic fiction, yes. You've got crime, you've got the travelogue in many ways with respect to travels around the world with llama drama and so on. Have you had a chance to look at any of the other nominees, or is it a case of, no, I will not touch crime drama if you paid me?
Oh, no, I actually love different to read any, I'll read anything. And I've actually downloaded the other contestants' books. I eventually will get into it. I'm on a writing deadline right now. But just to be with these other contestants in the top five is amazing. And I know that their books are, you know, top notch. So I definitely would love to read them.
Excellent stuff. Well, I mean, certainly I would obviously say go to CameronA.com, which is obviously the website for your good self, to actually find out more details about some of the fabulous things that you've put together. Clearly, you can actually use the Amazon system to actually find out about the Amazon UK Kindle Storyteller Awards 2020. You are, I think, the only American entry in the top five.
So, I am. Yeah.
So from that point of view, is it a case of, yeah, bring it on? You know, we've had to cope with some strange guy in the White House who's got his own problem these days with respect to viruses and so on. So let's bring it on. Is that the case, or is it a case of, what you're thinking, well, we'll just see where we go?
Yes, you know, I do feel like the underdog, being the only American, just seeing the other four and reading what their books are about. It's going to be tough, and you know, any one of us or any one of them will
You're all winners, Kama. You're all winners, Kama. That's what we say. Yeah, just to get to that stage. All winners. That's the important thing. Kami, it's been awesome connecting with your good self today. I'm sure you'll have a fantastic day in Las Vegas, because obviously time zones being what they are, we're working through that. In fact, we're doing a piece later on with somebody who's actually going to be based in San Diego. So we go a little bit even further to Pacific Standard Time, which is great. But for the moment, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Wonderful. This is actually my first radio interview, so I'm excited. I'm nervous.
You are a natural, Gabby, a natural. Once we actually got to press the right buttons, all was well from that point of view in terms of the connection and the link. The mystical gods of Zoom have actually worked once again. So the next critical question is, it's your first. Will you consider returning? Can we actually prevail upon you to join us again in the not too distant future?
Definitely.
Gabby Renee, another one of the fabulous shortlisted authors for the UK Kindle Storyteller Award 2020. Be safe, have a great time, and continued good writing work.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.podbeam.com. keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
So it's that time of the programme when, after all of the thrills and excitement of actually revealing the shortlist for the Kindle Amazon Award and interviewing four of the fine authors for said award, J.M. Dalgleish, Anna McNuff, Camille Renee, all the way from Las Vegas, and Kim Nash, we have a slight sigh and say, it's time to have a little review of the week and actually talk to some regular midweek drivettes and general wonderful folk and find out what their thoughts are in terms of how life is treating us. For instance, Katie Grimerson says earlier on a text, great words from Middlesbrough Mayor. So refreshing to hear someone speak some sense for a change. Well said, Katie. Well said indeed. How is life in Birmingham?
Yeah, it's okay. Just been applying to jobs, been getting some piano practicing and swimming as well. So it's cool.
This is great. And then obviously all the way in Wales, where, as we know, he's really got the whole essence of life, the universe and isolation down to a T. It's Robin Pearce. How are you, Robin?
Hello there. How are you?
Well, we're okay. And one of these days, we're going to have to get you a better catchphrase than hello, how are you? Because it's almost taken out of context. It could actually be a rap tune from the 1990s. I know.
Hang on a second. We could always go with, hey, kids.
No. we'll also sort of welcome back to the whole area of the Midweek Drive, Aisle, Kira Mullins, all the way from Twickenham, although originally from Ireland.
That's the one. Hello, everyone. How are you doing? You all right?
Well, we're still here and we're still actually coping with timetable glitches and all sorts of other marvellous things because Lincoln, possibly quite advisedly, hasn't quite gone full force into teaching as yet. We start off next week before we have our very own scenario apropos of what's been happening in universities across the base, etc. Kira, if you cast your mind back to your own time as an undergraduate, if this had actually happened, that particular period, I know, oh, almost two decades ago, but what the heck? In fact, is it over two decades? Yeah. So how would you have coped? I mean, would it have been a case of, I'm getting back to Ireland as soon as possible, or it's a case of, well, we're here, we'll make the best of it, especially if we're locked in?
I was thinking about this just the other day, actually, because I've seen, obviously, there's been lots of coverage, and I'm sort of, in trying to work it out myself, I was thinking, what would I have done? And I remember thinking back to my time in halls of residence in the first year, and one thing that struck me was that I guess if there was ever a time to be stuck in one place, now isn't so bad given the amount of technology everybody's got at their immediate disposal. And I know that has, you know, pros and cons attached to it and all the rest, but I would have been stuck with a radio and maybe a TV. That was about it. And my the lady I was sharing with at the time, but it would, I suppose I'd just have made the best of it. I remember it was I'm so old, it was pre-mobile phones. And I remember lots
Pre-mobile phones?
I know. Lots of students were you know, I remember a lot, it was this bad. You had to line up for the payphone to make a call home to like family and whatever else. So I remember thinking, I was a bit grumpy, I was like, I'm not too fussed about my life. Can I just like hurry on, crack on, say hello, say I'm alive, and then someone else never go. So I probably would have just made the best of it, I guess. But everybody's different, and some people are less affected by some things than others. So I suppose it's going to vary for everybody.
Well,
considerably.
If it helps, Kira, you are now living not too far away. If it's still there, because of course Tower Road did used to have outside the post office a payphone that I myself used to use when I was an undergraduate to again phone home and say, I'm still alive, either send money or are you ready for more clothing? It's all one of those things. Obviously, it wasn't quite as crass as that, clearly. You know, that's the key thing, but there we are. In fact, do they still have payphones in Twickenham?
Good question. I'm not that many, to be honest, no. There's one or two things that resemble telephone booths, but I'm not entirely sure that's what they do anymore.
Yeah. Katie, I mean, is Birmingham known for its telephone booth environment, or is it a case of what strange language are you actually talking? You know, get with it, for goodness sakes.
I think most of them have actually gone now. Telephone booths, yeah.
Yeah, the way of the police box, of course, into a dim and distant future. Robin, what about yourself? I mean, is it a case of, can you even remember a time pre-mobile phones, really?
Of course I can. I think when I got my first mobile phone, I was it was just before my 40th birthday, as I recall. And yeah, I can well remember, if you wanted to phone some, I can remember a time when we didn't even have a phone in the house. You know, it was a luxury item, especially in the 60s. Not everybody did.
But Robin, you were from Wales. You are in Wales. So clearly, you know, of the four here countries that we actually got here
it comes.
Now, behave.
I think it's wonderful, slightly changing the tone here, that just as Shocktober actually starts and launches, which I know, Robin, you're quite interested in, and we've been covering Stoptober, obviously, to give up smoking if you ever started it. Which was,
what do you mean,
you know,
I'm interested in Shocktober? I created it.
Yeah, well, okay, I'm letting you go through the creation of Shocktober. But to actually celebrate that, we see that the President of the United States has actually gone down with coronavirus. Now, is this part of the PR campaign that you're using to kind of get that scariness to the fore?
Absolutely. I have paid to have Donald take a dive. And then as we get closer to October 31st, we are staging a thunderstorm. And, you know, we'll have Melania in a white frock saying, he lives. And the Donald will rise up again and win the election through a sympathy vote. You know, his superior orange genes will have beaten everything. I'm not buying the fact that he's got coronavirus for a second, if I'm honest. I think it's a ploy. Coronavirus 2020's bone spurs.
But are you actually implying, and I'll bring in both Kira and Casey on this, that actually it could be as questionable as his statement that the only reason he is not follically challenged is because he's been eating McDonald's fries?
No, I'm sorry. I might have been misunderstood here. I'm not implying anything. I am outright saying it.
Okay. Well, I mean, again, I wasn't aware that the cure for any kind of baldness was indeed to eat McDonald's fries. Maybe it's a case of it's an offset. You kind of kill yourself with a coronary thrombosis as opposed to other aspects. Kira.
Well, it helps him. I am ready to send over a bottle of Domestos and a hypodermic.
Kira, would you like to actually take the Southern Ireland, the era, more diplomatic approach here and actually sort of give us your thoughts on you know, what some might say were some of Robin's more direct approaches there?
Yeah. I did find it amusing when I woke up this morning and read that the Donald had succumbed to coronavirus. Not brilliant timing, although not optimum timing. If you were to plan such a thing, you'd say you'd push it another week or so just to get it that teeny little bit closer to the election. But I don't know. Sympathy vote of otherwise, it's certainly going to throw us another spanner in the general election works, which seem to be quite topsy-turvy as it is already. But
yeah,
at least it might postpone or be something about the second planned shouting fest, which I don't think anybody's looking forward to.
Well, yeah, we were certainly talking with some of our American correspondents yesterday, and there was apparently rumours that he might be looking to extend the term of the presidency from maybe 4 years to 8 years, 16 years, maybe 32 years. So, yeah, it's nice to see that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Katie, I know you were so disillusioned with our little mini Trump in 10 Downing Street that, frankly, his last public statement, you gave short shrift to that and said, you've already had enough challenges put forward by BJ, Pojo, etc. You just weren't going to stand it anymore. Have you changed at all?
No, I'm still not looking at what's going on, to be honest. It just gets me down. The last few days I've been quite happy and content. And I think that's because I haven't been reading the news and stuff.
The danger, of course, in not actually following the news is you can suddenly find yourself fined £10,000 just for actually sort of walking out of the house without necessarily... No, I'm kidding. Don't worry. Don't panic about that. After all, as long as we have neighbours who can snitch on us, we're obviously in good company from that point of view. It's like the Stasi circa 1972 in East Germany. Robin, let's get back to Shocktober. Talk to us about it. We're already today in Universal Takeover Day 2. It's alive! So share with us, what are we doing? What's it all about? And why maybe should Katie and Kira, in betwixt times, maybe just actually check this one out as well?
Shocktober. I started my sort of, if you can call it a career, my writing career, blogging back in the days of MySpace when you could still put blogs up. And I did film reviews and stuff like that. This is before I started working for magazines and doing conventions. And as it came into October, I thought, you know, could we do some sort of film festival where you don't have to leave the house and people can join in from all over the world if they want to? So I used to sort of list some films. I used to put it thematically, and it kind of started to get a following. Not a big follow. I mean, I'm not talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. So I did that. That was 15 years ago. 10 years ago, I launched my own website, having worked for 4 years on a horror magazine before I went on to work for Starburst, and I decided to carry it on. Now, as the website is celebrating 10 years this year, I thought, let's extend Shocktober. And it used to be about 13 movies that I would do, the 13 screams of Shocktober, of Halloween. So I decided to turn it on its head, do 31. And it was the first time I'd ever covered the universal black and white classics, 1931 through to 1945, which really was my introduction to horror movies and then on to sci-fi movies. And I absolutely love those films, but I'd never actually written about them. So I had this big Blu-ray box set of remastered, and there was 30 in that. I plundered some of my other collections and came up with 31 must-see Universal movies. And this is what I did during lockdown. I would watch one and then write, you know, a couple of pages about it and store it away. So they're all written, they're all ready. They're at www.robinpierce.co.uk. Or if you follow my Facebook feed, I update those daily. So there's one fresh one every day in chronological order. And I can tell you now that tomorrow's Bela Lugosi, Parisian Rooftops, Murders in the Rue Morgue, it's a cult classic.
As Craig Harmaty says in a post on the aforementioned Facebook page, a friend of mine from Wales, Robin Pierce, does monster movie reviews every year for his website, robinpierce.co.uk, leading up to Halloween. This year, he told me he was going to be focusing on Universal monster movies. So I said, hey, how about I do an illustration for that? So here is the finished product. Well, no painting is ever finished. Well said, Craig. It's an interesting painting, but it's not necessarily finished. Katie, where do you sit on the whole classic horror movie debate? Is it a case of, no, I don't like horror. You know, politics is sufficient horror for myself. What's your kind of view on the whole thing?
I would like to start watching horror films, but my mind kind of like plays tricks on me if I watch stuff. So I guess, like, what film could you recommend to me? What's not like mega scary, but still in the horror genre?
I would absolutely recommend, if you want to go all the way back to the silent era, there are some really, really good films. I can suggest Nosferatu, which was made in 1922 and is a silent plagiarism of Dracula. And it's possibly one of the best Dracula movies they ever made. But, you know, Bram Stoker's widow sued them. Every copy was thought to be destroyed as part of the court settlement, but one existed and it's available on Blu-ray today. That's worth watching. There's The Man Who Laughs, which is fairly tragic, about a man who has his face disfigured by gypsies to be sold onto a freak circus, but then sort of...
But then he can't laugh, Robin, surely. I mean, sorry? If he's had his face disfigured, he can't laugh. So isn't there a problem with the title?
It's like a Joker-like grin. No, of course, yeah. And of course, Bob Kane saw this back in 1939, and it was the basis of The Joker. But if you want to go on from there, and you know your preferences for something with sound, then by all means, 1931, Frankenstein, The Bride of Frankenstein, Boris Karloff as the monster, never, ever bettered.
Kira, now, one of the most horrific movies for many film critics this year was Artemis Fowl, set as it is in Ireland, and also featuring a Dame Judi Dench saying, "Top of the morning to you," in a way that no! only Dame Judi Dench could say. It's,
no,
it's worth subscribing
to. Annoy me. That's all he has to do. Stop it.
Yeah, well, I knew it was going to sort of press the button, Kira, but at the end of the day, it had to be said. You know, it's there worthwhile subscribing to Disney Plus just to go to Artemis Fowl, and yes, it may well drive you to drink. Top of the morning to you. I mean, it's yeah, exactly.
He has something on all of us.
Yes. Well, it sounds like I very luckily escaped that one.
But when it comes to horror, of course, the other challenge that I've been set by Keith Tainton is to get yourself, Ross Bowering, now in the States, of course, and Keith together for a kind of reunion of the early horror show that was indeed Siren Radio, and indeed still maintains its sort of thing from that point of view. But that's another line entirely. But in terms of classic horror, is that something which you've been keen on or following through, or is it a case of, yeah, we don't know?
Much to Robin's disappointment, I would have to say, not really sort of a particular genre of interest for me. I'm sort of, people go, oh, you know, horror movies, scary movies. It's like, oh, no, you're all right, you can keep them. I would probably, as a kid, have watched, budgets in Ireland were limited for TV movies. So there was a lot of like old musicals, a lot of old detective movies.
Brigadoon is fairly horrific. Gene Kelly.
Yeah. So I suppose I wouldn't have had an awful lot of exposure, to be honest. And then I'm sort of a bit, you know, like Katie, I'm sort of naturally not sort of being, kind of go, no, you're all right, keep it. Yeah. Which is a bit, you know, close-minded me, but minded even of me, but I'm sort of, I would not necessarily gravitate towards horror movies.
In which case, cast your mind, before you actually got into the care home business and the lines from that perspective and all the challenges with respect to that.
Difference. It's people in their own homes. The other way.
Let's just say that one more time, Kira, because you're quite right. It is completely different. The company that you run is?
CuraCare. CuraCare Twickenham and East Sheen. And we look after people in their own homes. So it's the exact opposite. If you wish to not go to a care home, you can stay at home and we can come and look after you there.
Exactly. Win-win situation. But allowing for that, prior to that, your work within sports broadcasting and so on, were there ever any moments in terms of live broadcast or sport, etc., which you thought, this is a nightmare, this is a horror show? Or did you ever have any kind of anxiety dreams about the sort of notions of when things were happening or not happening?
Not so much the anxiety dreams. I've had a few moments where I've gone, ooh, this isn't good. The one that sprang to mind just a second ago was I worked on athletics. I worked with the agency that both stage managed or ran the athletics event for British Athletics. And it was one of the summer events, and it was in London. I was working on the commercial side, making sure that all of the sponsorship that you saw, all the sponsors had all their boards in the right places and all that kind of really boring stuff that nobody cares much about apart from the sponsors, understandably. But Aviva were one of the sponsors, and as part of their package of rights and so on, we had some activities that they ran. But in a nutshell, the actual relay batons had been borrowed for part of their activity, which was kind of my fault. And it became very, 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 very close to the time when the actual relay was due to start broadcast nationally.
A relay with no batons.
Yes. So it did involve a situation whereby we realised this, and we realised that the actual batons were with the wrong people in the hospitality area, quite a way away from the track.
Send for the brown sticks, you should have said.
Well, yes, and there was this really, really sort of quite bizarre moment where my counterpart from the Aviva side and I were literally running it, and I mean, not very fast. I can walk.
You're creative, Kira. You don't run. You have others run for you. That's the way forward.
Some people are naturally better at one or two, but I So we had to leg it with these batons and get them back to a very, very understandably grumpy
athletes.
Lovely man from, yes, Malcolm, who was in charge of the athletic procedure. Proceedings rather, so we got them back on time, but it really was, oh my god, they actually need them in like 2 minutes and they're in the wrong place.
You see, that's the kind of organization that Tokyo can only dream about, basically. The person in charge of the athletic procedure. It sounds like a medical term. It's great. You know?
It's a Friday. It's, I'm not sure much of my brain is.
It's the joy of podcasting. Katie, what about yourself? I mean, any sort of times where you thought it's all, whether you're working in the jewellery quarter of Birmingham, whether it's a case of your time doing American studies, any moments where you thought, well, that was quite horrific, but we got through it?
Yes, it was in one of your seminars, actually, when I accidentally picked to go first to present. And I didn't
mean
realize...
accidentally picked to go first to present. I said, who'd like to go first? Yeah. Your hand pops up straight away.
And you were just like, yeah, Katie's going to start everything off. And I was like, oh my God. Because I hate
she did.
But I got
everything kicked off. But yeah, well, apologies if I was responsible for one of your undergraduate nightmares. I mean, I try to sort of alleviate that, but you never know these days, you know, just carry on. We started off by talking about the Amazon UK Kindle Storyteller Awards 2020. And it's interesting looking at the genres. This is actually voted for. Nominees have actually come out of the readership, who've actually opted to go for Amanda Radley, J.M. Dalgleish, Anna McNuff, Camille Renee, and Kim Nash. Now, they've covered all sorts of genres. So my general question is, Robin, I think you've already answered it. Your genre, your preferred genre, would probably match most closely with Camille Renee, who writes young adult fantasy and has the classic line in Of the Blood, the story follows the life of Calla Caldwell as she falls for a charming and mysterious stranger who she quickly discovers is a vampire prince. Well, isn't that a deal breaker in most relationships, as we said, with the author who started off her life in Hawaii, went to Alaska, and now lives in Las Vegas. But Robin, are you going to surprise us all and say, no, I'm a secret romantic comedy fan?
In books now? No, I'm very much a Stephen King fan. I like, you know, yeah, it's mainly horror, not as much sci-fi. I don't read much fantasy at all. I mean, this is going to sound blasphemous. I did try reading some Tolkien. I got through The Hobbit. And for me personally, I found Lord of the Rings just too flowery and unreadable. So I like the films very much. And, you know, somebody's going to take a hit out on me right now. But, you know, if you want to describe an elf or a goblin or whatever kind of creature
you look
that you
at what
there,
Dame Judi Dench says with her characteristic as a leprechaun, police inspector leprechaun, where she says, top of the morning to you, in her Judi Dench way. Or Judi Dench way.
You know, I don't get those descriptions. I don't understand. I can't visualize it. Something in horror, I can. Sci-fi, I can. But when it's something like that, I really can't. I mean, show me. Don't try and describe it.
Okay, Katie, what is your genre? Is it like Kim Nash, somebody who basically has written Sunshine and Second Chances, a novel about an uplifting feel-good summer about friendship, love, and second chances? Or would you actually say, no, it's horror for me all the way?
I like drama, romance, but in novels, I like war stuff, like World War II romance.
Excellent. The other one, which I suspect Kira might go for, is the classic llama drama. I'll say that again, llama drama. The tale of two women, Anna and her friend Faye, as they embark on a 6-month, 5,500-mile cycling adventure through South America. Produced by Anna McNuff and written by Anna McNuff, who is a legendary adventurer, etc. Is that something that you would like in true life, Kira? Or would you prefer J.M. Dalgleish's crime scenario, Hear No Evil, a fast-paced British detective novel with moments of humour and a touch of romance that will keep you guessing until the very end when the final shocking twist is revealed?
Well, I would have said the latter, but actually, the former sounds more interesting, but I would read both, to be honest. But yeah, how well you know me, Alan.
Well, you know, when you get questions from one of the contributors to today's little segment, and the line is, what are we going to talk about? It's just, they have no faith, honestly. Sometimes Welsh people have no faith that you're not going to guide them through and coordinate in a structured, wonderful sort of way from that point of view. Robin, it's time now for you to actually throw any questions you like, within reason, obviously, to Kira and Kate. Kira's obviously sort of taking part in the drinking game today because...
It's
you may say it's water. It looks like gin or vodka to me, Kira, but let's just step away from that.
When you start to hear the ice cubes, it will be gin or vodka, but it's
course,
not.
Of course, exactly. Robin, over to you.
What kind of films do you two like then? I mean, we know you don't like horror, but what, you know, you've got your film subscription, be it streaming, be it whatever, and you've got your genres. What's your first choice? Katie, you first.
Rom-com, but then I do like my war stuff. I've been binge-watching Call of the Midwives for the past few weeks. So,
what drew you to Second World War stuff?
It's more like if it's forbidden love, so love between so like, a German...
Allied? Was it Allied?
Yeah, so like... Yeah. Love between a German officer or an English woman, that kind of stuff. And it's just quite, I find it quite gripping and fascinating, really, because of how it was at the time. Like, it was so forbidden. And I just find it really interesting.
You should go for the Guernsey Potato Peel Society. A classic movie and a classic novel, basically, between occupied Guernsey in the Second World War, and indeed the sort of twists which were, it's a feel-good novel which has all sorts of magical things on that. It's, I think, the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society is the name of the novel.
See, if I'd have mentioned that first, he would have said, you should have gone for Allied. Kira, what about you?
What about me? I'm trying to think, that's clearly not a good idea. I suppose I have reason, you know, parking the horror, which, you know, we've done earlier, reasonably eclectic. I quite like a lot of old movies. Like, I love sort of David Lean, sort of Lawrence of Arabia type, big, huge, expansive movies. Cliche.
You know, to me, that's not an old movie, because old movies are films that were made before I was born, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, fair enough. Like, you know, not quite as modern as some of the others.
Brief encounter, perhaps.
Keep digging.
I will. Okay, go on. I like westerns. I like things of historical interest. I like you know, things with a twist. You don't necessarily know where you're going. I suppose it depends on your mood, really. Sometimes you know, a rom-com is exactly what you need. Sometimes you want something a bit more meaty to get, you know, your brain.
I actually have been known to watch rom-coms when in the mood.
Wow.
Don't spread that around.
And that's just one of the reasons why this week Robin Pierce celebrated 31 years of wedded bliss with his wife Maria.
Oh.
I know.
I'm only 7 years, and you know, so that's
awful. We just carry on. That's the important thing. Carrying on, carrying on. And carry-on movies obviously haven't actually been mentioned once, but never mind. We'll obviously have to step away from the whole notion of carry-on matron, carry-on screaming, which surely, Robin, should have actually formed one of your Shocktober reviews, if only for Fenella Fielding's classic routine.
Well, Universal Pictures weren't actually involved with that one, so that's my get-out clause. I actually do have all the carry-on films. I bought them last year because... I had this sudden sort of fear that political correctness would cause them to be taken away for all time. And I bought the Christopher Lee Fu Manchu movies, a box set of all of those, for exactly the same reason.
This is obviously a huge admission on open CIA listen to Zoom scenarios, Robin. So maybe we just need to change the names to protect the innocent. I mean, to admit you've got a box set of Carry On movies and the Christopher Lee Fu Manchu. I mean, next thing you'll be saying you always have had a fondness for a Breakfast at Tiffany's with Mickey Rooney's impersonation of a Chinese person. Again, a definite no-go in our contemporary world.
Well, you know, I've had Breakfast with Tiffany many, many times.
Yeah, your
daughter. My daughter.
Exactly. What a neat way to actually wrap things up. So for another little sequence, another little segment. Katie, any final closing thoughts for yourself from the joys of Erdington in Birmingham?
Not really, no.
That's fine. What about yourself, Kira? No, we've exhausted that one as well. This is what you call reaching a natural phase of the end of this particular segment, which again, the Midweek Drive folk will actually say, yes, that's what it's all about, structure. At the end of the day, take that, Talk Radio, Times Radio, and other broadcasting institutions. We've covered COVID-19 in the White House, or not as the case may be, the Robin Pierce Shocktober scenario, which you can go to robinpierce.co.uk and find out even more delightful things about from that point of view. We've heard about the tale of the almost missing batons in the relay service, and of course, Katie's views on politics, not really to be aired again from that point of view. Step away from that and step away from the screen. So, Kira, would you like to put those last two questions to the team? Over to you. They basically are, Kira, I know it's been a long time, like 4 weeks. So have you had a reasonably interesting Zuma, and will they come back again? Off you go.
Rob, oh no, ladies first. Katie, have you had a reasonably interesting Zuma, and will you return again?
Yes to both questions.
Wonderful. I'm sure Alex would be very pleased to hear that. And Robin, how about yourself?
This particular segment has been like the radio equivalent of a painting by Escher. It's been that surreal. So, yes.
Fantastic. Correct answer.
And Kira, has it been okay for yourself?
Yeah, it's been all right.
Well, you know, still to come, two more Zoomers. We're actually going live to San Diego, and then we've also got Calgary with a finalist of the Crime Writers of Canada Arthur Ellis Award, Dwayne Clayden, who, strangely enough, actually writes crime thrillers, and his third novel, Wolfman is Back. Yes, I'll say that again. Wolfman is Back. Was released in November last year, almost a year to the day that he made his debut on the Midweek Drive. To Robin Pierce, to Kira Mullins, to Katie Grimerson, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. Don't be frightened by the line that if you see any bald people, it's simply because they haven't been eating McDonald's fries. It happens to us. I don't, and I wouldn't sort of recommend that at all in any way, shape or form. So can we all say happy trails?
Happy trails.
Happy trails.